Eddie Money passed away this morning. Eddie, of course, known for his song Two Tickets to Paradise, a legend on the Sunset Strip in West Hollywood, and historically one of the first rockers to overdose on fentanyl in 1981 is part of his life story, and that is going to be the focus of our next discussion. And we are very blessed to have Jimmy Palmieri, the founder of the Tweakers Project, here on the show with us, and also David Vandervelt from Awakening Recovery is also in studio with us. Welcome, guys. Glad to have you both.
Hey, John. Thanks to have us.
So let's talk a little bit about what the issue is, because it's crystal meth, but it's crystal meth laced with deadly fentanyl that's causing all the deaths in the gay community. I mean, yeah. How would you describe it, Jim?
You know, it we need to open the conversation, and it's happening now. There's a killer at the party is what the new campaign is, and you're doing a drug that you have no clue you're doing. So you may think you're doing just meth, which is bad enough, okay, or just coke or some type of opioid, but it has fentanyl in it, or carfentanil, and the tiniest little bit can kill you. You know, what could kill you or what could kill me, no one knows. So the people that are cutting it in and putting it in, they have no clue what amount is going to harm someone. And we've known dozens of people that this has happened to. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to be going anywhere soon.
And why do they put it in the first place? To think it's a higher high or a more potent drug? Or,
you know, dealers are always looking to cut, you know, and with a cheaper ingredient. This is a synthetic. This is a little bit cheaper. And they also want to get customers addicted quickly. But they have no clue what amount is going to keep their customers coming back and what's going to make them lose their customers.
Right. To death. To death.
Yeah.
To death. David, at Awakening Recovery, are most of your people who come to live in your facility, is it alcohol? Is it meth? Is it both? Or
I would say that most of the guys that come into the house are polysubstance use addicts. And a lot of the time it's heroin and meth. That's becoming more and more the case. Mm. Sometimes alcohol too, but less so, I would say, as time goes by, especially with people in their 20s.
Mm-hmm. The percentage of LGBT people who are alcoholic or drug addicts is significantly higher than the general population. Reasons why? A whole lot of reasons why? Do you have any opinion on that?
I mean, I think addiction is, you know, epigenetic, meaning that there are some genetic predispositions to addiction. There's also environmental factors that go into it, which is the new, not so new anymore field of epigenetics. But I think especially for the LGBT community, although I would say it's also true for other addicts, is there's a lot of trauma, you know, in their backgrounds. And I think for the LGBT community, you know, that's even probably more so the case. I mean, if you look at the suicidality rates in the transgendered community, is even higher than the, you know, LGB part of the LGBT part of it. And I think it is a lot because of trauma, you know, a lot of growing up and being stigmatized, discriminated against, you know, emotional trauma, sexual trauma, physical trauma, you know, all of those things encourage you to want to escape, you know. And I think a lot of times there's also co-occurring mental health issues that derive out of all of those things I just said. And sometimes illicit drugs are used to self-medicate, you know, aside from what would be prescribed to you normally for a mental health issue. And a lot of times when people are younger, they're not properly diagnosed for the mental health issues, they start using illicit drugs, and then those develop their own issues on their own. And then not only do they have the co-occurring mental health issue, they also have the addiction, and they feed off of each other.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most painful things for anybody is to watch a loved one, a lover, a partner, a family member, a child go through addiction. And I've watched people bang their heads up against the wall like, he just won't stop. He's hiding it from me. He's not telling the truth. He keeps saying he's sober, but there's evidence that he's still using. I just don't know what to do. Jimmy, when those people show up at your door, what do you tell the partner or husband or wife or parent about what they should do?
You know, it sounds tough, you know, I've lived through it several times. You have to take care of yourself. You can't help anyone else if you're not helping yourself. Everyone has their path, and this isn't tough love. This is just fact. You can't prevent someone from using. Hopefully, they're going to see that they can take a different path. But, you know, John, self-help is the best medication. And sadly, there's nothing that you can say that I can say that's going to make someone stop.
Get between him and his drug.
You just can't.
Her and her drug.
You know, in couples, even monogamous couples, there's someone they're cheating with, and it's the drug. You know, I always look at the drug as the mistress or the other guy.
We got to go to commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about meth, fentanyl overdose, and recovery in the LGBT community here on Sidebar with John Duran on Channel Q. Welcome back, guys. We're talking to Jimmy Palmieri, founder of the Tweakers Project, and David Vanderveld from Awakening Recovery about drug use and meth and fentanyl and recovery in the LGBT world. Let's talk a bit about, you know, the connection between meth and sex, because that's, for a lot of at least gay and bisexual men and trans people, that seems to be the connection, is the sex and meth in the same place. And it even overlays into sex workers using it as a drug to stay awake for days and make money. Mm-hmm. What are you guys seeing out there?
Well, I would say that, you know, meth is unique in the drug world because, you know, they all feed off the dopamine center in the brain. And, you know, cocaine and heroin are in like the 400%, you know, of what like sex would be like 200%. So with coke and heroin, it can be like 400%. But with meth, unlike anything else in the world, it jacks your dopamine levels up to over 1,000%.
Oh, wow.
There is nothing like it on the planet that occurs naturally. So being the pleasure center of the brain, there's always typically a huge connection between sex and methamphetamine. And both in terms of sex triggering meth use and, you know, meth triggering, you know, high-risk sex behaviors, they really go hand-in-hand in my experience.
Mm, mm. And then the sex workers. Jimmy, what are you seeing out there with sex workers?
So, you know, I used to be the chair of the youth subcommittee and the gay and lesbian youth subcommittee, and a lot of the youth were using meth to stay awake. On the street, the ones that were tossed away and living on the streets of LA, they were using it to stay awake so that when they fell asleep, their belongings weren't stolen or they weren't raped or they weren't harmed. And so that's when I started to see so many younger folks using meth. And a lot of them turned to survival sex work for money to survive, to eat, just to get by. And this started to become part of their ritual. And it became tribal, and as our friend is saying, it's a very libidinous drug. So it allows folks to continue to have sex, but most times not have an orgasm. Mm. So they can continue and have sex with multiple partners, not have an orgasm, and the abrasions that they have from having sex, unsafe sex, unplanned sex, showed us a rise in not only HIV, but a meteoric rise in gonorrhea, syphilis, and chlamydia. Luckily, because of PrEP and other things, we're seeing a decrease in HIV, but everything else is sky high.
Yeah, and I think long-term the problem is that people lose their minds. I mean, the mental corrosion of the brain that occurs with long-term meth use, and then eventually you lose your teeth, mm-hmm. and you lose your beauty, and it's not pretty. Mm-hmm. But let's be realistic. We know that, you know, if people want help and they want to stop, there's a whole lot of resources. We'll get into that in a second. But people who are not going to stop using meth, the city of West Hollywood and other communities coming up with fentanyl testing strips as a form of harm reduction. Can you, Jimmy, describe how these strips work?
So I'm showing you one right now, and it looks like any other, like a pregnancy test, or, you know, what we call a pee test, where someone would test their urine, and if it was a dirty urine, they wouldn't be able to stay into a rehab. These are, if it's two lines on it when you test your drug, it's safe. If it's one line, it's not safe.
So you put your part of your drug in water?
In water.
In water. And how do you know how much drug to put and how much water?
There's like no recipe. Just put a little tiny bit of water and sprinkle some of your drug in, stir it up, and let it sit. And then take it out and let it sit for 20 seconds, 25 seconds or so, and you'll start to see the lines coming. Is it foolproof? Nothing's foolproof. It's harm reduction, damage control. They're going to use, and I have zero judgment on anyone's use, but I want them to stay alive if they're going to use.
Right. We don't mind if you party and play. Just don't wake up dead.
It's none of our business.
Don't wake up. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So these fentanyl strips, you put them in water, it comes out. If it's got two lines, it means it's been tainted or laced with fentanyl, and then you know not to use this drug, right? Yeah.
One line is positive, two lines are negative. So
okay.
So they're free. We're giving them for free. The city of West Hollywood has provided... we gave 7,000 away at Sizzle, the Sober Carnival, and the APLA will be giving, I think, 10,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 for free.
Right, and the LGBT Center has them also,
yes,
right?
You can just go get them. No questions asked, John.
Right. So the people who are listening around the country in your other 27 cities besides Los Angeles, talk to your LGBT centers and your HIV foundations to get these fentanyl testing strips. People are going to use. Let's not have them die. From their drug use. David, if somebody does want to get help, well, let's talk a bit about recovery and resources. If somebody's finally bottomed out, whatever that means, jobless, homeless, familyless, soulless, that's where I bottomed out, soulless. Wherever one bottoms out, what happens then?
Well, I mean, you're talking about the end result. You know, I think, you know, to Jimmy's point, you know, these harm reduction techniques that people are using, whether it's fentanyl strips or safe injection sites, I mean, as a harm reduction technique in helping people not overdose, I think that's one issue. Abstinence-based recovery is another issue. You know, a lot of times the ultimate goal is abstinence. That's certainly what I believe in. But that's not everybody's goal all the time. And I think that needs to be recognized as well. I think ultimately, if we believe in the disease concept of addiction, that it is a fatal progressive disease, that over any period of time it will get worse, never better, then there needs to be a long-term approach to recovery. I think the problem right now with the pharmaceutical companies and with the insurance-based treatment modalities out there is that they are more focused on 30, 60, 90-day recovery solutions. And you can't change core beliefs and behaviors in 30, 60, or 90 days when you've been, you know, doing hardcore drugs for 5, 10, 15 years. It's just not possible. Hmm. It's a good introduction, but it doesn't allow you to really achieve what I would call more longer-term recovery, 1, 2, 5 years plus. Hmm. And I think, you know, if it's going to get better in recovery in the community, we need to be focusing on people's long-term recovery and not just short-term fixes. Hmm. Look, we have an opioid crisis. People are overdosing and dying. You know, solutions like naloxone to bring people back from overdoses is really important. I think other forms of MAT, medically assisted treatment, like buprenorphine and methadone-based treatments, again, are good for detox and extended detox. But with 80% noncompliance rates and 80% relapse rates off of buprenorphine and methadone, buprenorphine is the most misused prescription opioid currently. So the pharmaceutical companies are making a lot of money. It is good for a short-term fix, but again, it doesn't really achieve, for most people, a long-term solution to their recovery from alcoholism and drug addiction. So I think really, you know, the modalities, I don't want to plug Awakening Recovery too much, but, you know, like Awakening Recovery that has a year plus long process is really what's needed. All of the NIH studies show the longer you can keep somebody in the same place doing the same thing with the same people, the better the outcomes. Mm. The problem is there isn't a profit structure, corporate structure, business model in place to support those longer term modalities. So most of the ones out there that do a year plus processes are nonprofit, like Awakening Recovery. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be needed.
Yeah.
You know, there should be a way to find a way to get people engaged in a long term process that's based on connection and community that doesn't have to be nonprofit. Right. And I think it's possible. We just haven't gotten there yet.
You know, when Bill W. and Dr. Bob started Alcoholics Anonymous AA, you know, they were dealing with chronic alcoholism. But it seems to me like meth just takes people down so much faster, so much more quickly. Like you go from just trying the drug to complete addict in such a short period of time.
Well, you bring up a really great point. I mean, the damage that methamphetamine does to the brain is just as bad as alcoholism. I mean, when you think people have wet brain and such, but when you look at brain scans of people when they first get off meth, you know, and then you look at the brain scans a year to 18 months later, it takes a year to 18 months for the brain to heal from the organic damage that methamphetamine does, which is why, again, I think a longer term approach to recovery is so important, because up until that point, you're still dealing with a damaged brain physically.
Right, right. Wow. People want more information on either from either of your websites or how to reach you. How can we reach you? David, how can I get more information about Awakenings Recovery?
Awakeningrecovery.org, or where we have a Facebook page, and we are also on Instagram.
Okay. And Jimmy, Tweakers Project?
The Tweakers Project on Facebook. It's the T-W-E-A-K-E-R-S Project on Facebook. There's around 7,000 members right now worldwide, and it's a 24/7 support system. Anytime you go on there, somebody's chatting, so you'll be able to find help.
That's awesome, guys. Yeah. Thank you both for doing God's work.
Thanks, John.
Getting
Thanks,
people
John.
Clean and sober.
It.
We love that. When we come back, we'll have concluding remarks at the end of our September the 13th show. All right, guys. Talk to you soon here on Channel Q.